It's Mitch Lawrence, everybody. Yeah. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, now, I heard you guys say that I was thinking about it go 4 or 5. I thought it would only go 4-year series, so I'm totally shocked. I thought by now LeBron would be down in South Beach hanging out with Dwayne Wade getting ready for his finals appearance.
Yeah, no, we're not shocked either at all.
Yeah, you're not shocked. Please, DeRozan and Lowry, yeah. I mean, if I knew that DeRozan and Lowry were going to play like they did in Game 4 in the other parts of the series, I would have given them a puncher's chance against Cleveland.
So where does that put you now? Because, you know, we've watched maybe one of the great turnarounds in playoff history after getting thumped by 50 in the first two games. You win Game 3 by 15. You think, you know, the tides turned after being up 18 in the third quarter, down by 2 late in the fourth, and they hang on. You know, something you just, it was almost inevitable. We've talked about it here. Well, LeBron's just going to take this game over, but they didn't. Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan continue to play like they played for 48 minutes. They win Game 4, back in Cleveland for Game 5 tonight. Where do you put the Raptors' chances now, all things considered?
It's all going to come down to a Game 7. I'm going to give them a loss tonight. I don't think they're going to be able to figure it out tonight, but I'll give them a win at home because I don't think Cleveland is translating well on the road at all in this series. And Toronto's playing lights out at home, obviously. So I think it's going to come to Game 7 in Cleveland, and we'll see how the Raptors do that. So, yes, I'm now calling it a 7-game series.
Oh, my goodness.
How about that?
That's incredible. Mitch, is the key to this series, and we talked about it before things got going, and we laughed because the Cavs just whipped the Raptors the first two games, but should the Raptors just guard the rim, protect the paint, and see if they can take their chances with the Cavs shooting threes?
Well, that's the way they've done it in the last couple of games. I mean, Cleveland, Game 1, they had 56 points in the paint, as you saw, and they carved them up, and I think there were some adjustments made by Dwayne Casey and his staff. And in the last two games, they got combined in 3 and 4, 56 points in the paint, Cleveland. So obviously, yeah, you want to force them to shoot threes and take your chances. This is not the same three-point shooting team, the Cleveland team that I saw against Atlanta, especially in the last couple games. And I'd rather have my chance to, you know, with J.R. Smith and those guys shooting threes. But I don't know if they can, you know, it's one of these things where it's just going to be, it's already laid out. It's such a home series, road series for these teams that I think it's just going to come down to in Game 7, can Lowry and DeRozan outplay LeBron James in a big Game 7?
Yeah, that's the question, you know, and we didn't see it in Game 4, and like I said, segment, something you expected, you know, when Michael Jordan was up against it, against Utah, Michael Jordan took the game over. When Michael Jordan was up against Cleveland, where he beat Craig Elo, he took over that game. That's what Michael Jordan did. That's what the great players do. He pushed everybody aside, and he did what he had to do. We expected that from LeBron at the end of Game 4, and we didn't see it. Was he just gassed?
It's always dangerous to compare LeBron to Michael because they're such different players, and they're wired differently. And you knew with Jordan, he was going to take the game over or at least try to. And with LeBron, half the time or more, the dude is always about making the right basketball play. So if he gets doubled or if he feels he can't shoot because Channing Frye is open, he's going to get Channing Frye the ball. Now, I think that's absurd and ridiculous, but that's what you live with. Michael Jordan got the ball at times to Paxson and Kerr for big shots, but not a steady diet of him, especially when he knew there was a game to win and he had to take over, and he could. It's not like LeBron can't. Why can't LeBron take over? It's just his thinking, his mentality, the way he plays. And so he's always going to catch flack for not taking the game by the throat as he didn't do in Game 4.
I want to ask you, too, about some of the stuff that happened post-game. Post-game, Game 4, Tyronn Lue effectively said, I'm not going to put a fragile Kevin Love back in that game. The environment was too hostile.
Yeah.
He hadn't, and so I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Also, want to get your thoughts post game. LeBron James asked how his team played. He said, "Well, I played my game.
Yeah.
I played defensively really well. I played great at both ends of the floor." Are we starting to see? Hey, listen, when you're up against it, the real LeBron James comes out. And is Kevin Love effectively mentally done in this series?
He might be. He's pretty fragile as it is. I mean, if you're not playing a guy you paid $113 million to, you might have overpaid him by about $80 million or so. I mean, come on. You can't use that as an excuse. And as for LeBron, I saw those comments, and I'm already starting to think, is he starting to bail on this team? Is he starting to get one foot out the door for free agency? Because it sure sounded like to me. By the way, What was the whole thing about, I got a secret plan for this game? What was that all about? Obviously, it wasn't about trying to take over late because he didn't do it.
Yeah. Mitch, you ever see Michael Jordan flop?
You mean flop in terms of flop on the court or flop in a big game?
No, flop both.
No. I covered all of Jordan's games in the big games in the 80s. And then, I mean, I remember there were games where he would miss a shot late to close. I remember they were up in the at home in a Utah series. I can't remember if it was 97 or 98. He had the ball in his hands for a last-second shot, I think, to tie or win, and he missed. And we were all sitting there. Everybody was in disbelief. This was in Chicago. I'd have to go back and look at what game. I mean, it seemed like he always delivered in the clutch. And in terms of, hey, Michael Jordan did whatever he had to do to win. So if he flopped at times, he might have. I can't remember because flopping wasn't big back then. It was definitely frowned upon, not like now. But Michael Jordan, as we all know, he was cutthroat. He was an assassin. He, by any means necessary, that was his motto.
Yeah, well, we get that tonight, and we watched that last night, too, by any means necessary. Oklahoma City just sacrificing everything to every loose ball, every rebound. Yeah. The fight in those guys has been unbelievable. And I think, you know, from what I saw last night, and you can almost say this for the last two games, specifically in the Toronto and in the Cleveland series, the hungrier team, now you're down to the final four, the hungrier team, and we saw that last night, is always the better team when you stack up who's playing for both of these teams.
Yeah, it usually is. Now, here's the big difference, guys. We're talking about a team that won 73 games in the regular season. I mean, look, you know, on the game Sunday night, I'm sitting there watching this thing. It's over by halftime, and then they're down by 41 points. This is supposed to be a great team. I don't remember any Michael Jordan teams being down by 41 points in a game. And last night, they caught a huge break. Draymond Green should have been nowhere near that court. That was not a basketball play he made against Stephen Adams. I'm sorry.
You saying?
To me, it exposed the league as we're just about entertainment. We're not going to suspend a star because if you knew if it was the other guy delivering his kick to the private, Stephen Adams would have been out. He would have been done. So even with Draymond Green, who's been awful the last two games, there's an argument to be made he shouldn't have played last night just because he's been like a minus 73 the last two games. He's been awful. So, I mean, I'm just stunned by how inept the Thunder has made this team look. And you know, I know Draymond Green, people call him the heart and soul of the Warriors. Hello, we have a two-time MVP who has not showed up the last couple games. Steph Curry's been awful.
Has he been hurt?
I'm sorry?
Is he hurt?
Steph Curry? I don't think he's hurt. Maybe
think he's done?
Not 100%, but guys, I mean, he's just getting totally outclassed by Russell Westbrook. I mean, it's embarrassing. This is almost like, and nobody's written this yet because nobody goes back as far as I do on this, although some people do, but who knows. When Michael Jordan emasculated Clyde Drexler in the finals back in, was it 91 or 92
really did.
In there?
He really did.
He destroyed Clyde Drexler because it was one of these deals where we were all looking for someone who could be kind of like Michael, like, oh, this will be a great finals because Michael needs, like, we had Magic versus Bird. We had so-and-so versus so-and-so. We had Wilt against Russell way back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Michael needed a guy in the finals to go up against. Everybody thought it was going to be Clyde Drexler, and he destroyed Clyde Drexler, like Russell Westbrook has been doing to Steph Curry the last two nights.
Are you just seeing a case where Russell Westbrook is so much more physically aggressive than Steph, but it's intimidating to Steph. It looks like he's got Steph in the crosshairs, and then you know, like, and it's funny because I go back to when Steph nailed that three, turned around before I went in and stared at Ibaka. You know, like there's confidence, and then there's just a guy who just flat out beats you up during this series.
The only thing I've thought about in terms of Russell Westbrook this morning, as I've been looking at this playoffs, is what Mark Cuban said as his team was going down in flames in the first round. He is not a superstar. I think Mark Cuban owes Russell Westbrook an apology.
Yeah. You say now, 36, 11, and 11.
He's too busy trying to be the vice president for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, Mark Cuban. Yeah. So he's probably lost track of the NBA. But Mark, when you get a chance, you might want to tweet out, I might have that a little wrong.
Mitch, how pumped would the NBA be for an OKC-Toronto final?
They'd say to people, tune into the Stanley Cup. If you really want to watch a great finals, tune in. How about the original six Tampa Bay San Jose final?
Yeah.
I think the league would be shocked and not in a good way. I think the league was probably looking at, boy, we can get LeBron and Curry in a rematch. this is going to be unbelievable because LeBron's always been there. You know, it would be six straight times, and Curry's the two-time MVP, and LeBron came out and said, yeah, they won 73 games, and I, you know, he should be the MVP, but if you're talking about most valuable, there's a different, you know, all that stuff. If it were Toronto, Oklahoma City, I think there'd be people jumping out of windows at the NBA office.
Yeah. Wanted to ask you a question about that when it comes to what the NBA wants. You know, I don't like complaining about officiating.
But
I wanted I wanted to get your approach on this, because from the halfway through the second quarter of game three to halfway through the just before the second quarter, just into the second quarter of game four, that's 3.5 quarters of basketball.
Yeah.
Toronto didn't take a free throw. That's almost an entire game. Now, numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
The time that went by doesn't lie. What we saw being egregious non-calls didn't lie. Is this a case where you can plainly say that clearly officiating is being run or governed or influenced in some capacity by the National Basketball Association?
I think if you check the birth certificates, all your referees are American.
Now,
and I'm saying that
you're not helping Canadians' inferiority complex.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a few people who just went crazy. I don't think there's a conspiracy. I think what you raise is an excellent point. But does it go back to who's the more aggressive team? I don't know. I mean, I didn't track it as closely as you guys did. And I'm glad you did, because that's a tremendous statistical thing you brought up. But I have no idea about, you know, I'm
have you seen that before? You covered basketball for how long? 30 years?
Yeah, I started covering the Mavericks in Dallas in 87.
So have you seen that before? Have you seen almost an entire game collectively over two games when it comes to minutes played where one team didn't attempt one free throw?
No.
And the Raptors getting to the hoop, too.
What did the Cavs attempt in that stretch? Do you have that figure?
I don't have that figure, but I know that in the second
90.
Half... not even close.
Felt like it.
They're letting them play. I'm not saying they're not letting them play. But
it is a very, very concerning, weird stat. And I think if they do get to a game seven, which I fully expect, as I've now gone out on a limb and said, I think Dwayne Casey needs to remind his team, look, in this game in Cleveland, you're not going to get any breaks. You have to make it happen. You have to be the aggressors. You have to be doubly the aggressors. And maybe they have to do that tonight. Maybe they have to treat tonight like a game seven. You know, that's that old thing. Then maybe you can, if you can steal it somehow, maybe Kevin Love is still, you know, out there in outer space, and maybe LeBron's not going to take over. Who knows? Maybe you can wrap this thing up in six.
Mitch, where would that rank, though, the all-time upsets in the NBA? It wouldn't be Nuggets and Sonics in 94, would it?
Oh, I don't mind. You know what? I never think about the Nuggets and Sonics. I never thought this. I mean, you know, yeah, statistically it was a big deal, but were the Sonics some sort of a great team? They never won the title. I don't know. This would be, look, first of all, if Toronto beats LeBron James, that in itself is a monumental thing because, you know, this would be, there'd be holy hell on LeBron, obviously, not being able to get past a Toronto team that had never been to a conference finals. That would really hurt his legacy. But really, it's going to be overshadowed if Oklahoma City beats Golden State. Yeah. They're going to be two teams that combine for 140 wins this year.
Yeah.
You know, they're 6-1 in their last seven games against those two teams?
No.
I mean, that's like ridiculous. How well Oklahoma City, we all talk about, look, Toronto's taking great steps in these last two wins. And look at Lowry and DeRozan. How about the steps that Oklahoma City has taken from when the playoffs started and we all said, yeah, they got Westbrook and Durant, but they can't defend, they can't close out games. They're mindless, low IQ, high turnover team. Yeah. And they may now get to a title and win. Whoever expected that?
Nobody, because, you know, the Western Conference specifically was overshadowed by, obviously, the 73-win season and the Golden State Warriors and the possibility of a repeat and a unanimous MVP in Steph Curry. And then, you know, the secondary story is, my God, the only team that has a chance to beat these guys is a 67-win team, which is the San Antonio Spurs. And then, you know, third, maybe because I don't even think you put them on the radar. It was Oklahoma City, and they had an up and down season. But you know, it speaks volumes to the weirdness of the NBA playoffs so far. I mean, you know, you can say what you like about Steph Curry's injuries, his ankle in the first series, and of course his knee in the second series, and where that puts him and if he's at a disadvantage. But, you know, you only have to look as far as a 3-1 lead against Oklahoma City, and then in the Eastern Conference final, yeah, with the Raptors being tied at 2, and now this is a 3-game series, to go, you know what, hey, all bets are off when it comes to analyzing where we've come from and where we're going, yeah, and who might be the NBA champion this year.
You know, look, the Steph Curry thing, guys, when I watch him play now, he's running fine. I don't see any noticeable limps at all. And he's not shooting well, and he's not shooting threes. Remember, don't forget, I mean, maybe the play of the year was when he made that 37-footer to close out Oklahoma City on February 27th, which went viral. Everybody was talking about it. I'm sure people up there were talking about it. The guy was insane how good he was. In this series, he's been, what, the fifth best player, the sixth best player on the court? So I don't want to hear the fact that he's hurt. He's out there. He's running around. Now, Steve Kerr said, this happens. Your best players have off nights. Steve Kerr, he should be getting a call today from Michael Jordan pretty soon saying, dude, I never had an off night. Your MVPs shouldn't be having, can't have off nights, because by definition, MVPs don't.
Well, it's going to be fascinating. It's a 3-game series now in the East, and Golden State legitimately looks like they're in trouble. One last question. If there's a 3-1 deficit, any team can come back, dude. Do you put money against Golden State?
I think it's over. I don't think they're going to – I wouldn't be surprised if they lost Game 5. Guys, look, the way Oklahoma City is playing and the way Golden State has so many – they've sprung so many leaks, whether it's offense – we haven't even talked about their defense. They can't stop Durant and Westbrook. They can't stop the role players. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost at home. I really wouldn't be.
Wow. It's been crazy to watch and beneficial for us. Yeah, it's been awesome. And to say the least, Mitch, always appreciate your time. And thanks for taking so much time with us this morning.
Guys, enjoy the Stanley Cup like me.